would be someone with only the most tenuous link to Antony, who would be surprised at the numbers who have gathered here at Trinity this afternoon to mourn his untimely death, to give thanks for his life, and to support his children and each other in our shared loss. That so many of us should be so touched by his passing is a vivid testament to the full and multifaceted life that he led, as well as his unique capacity for friendship. He was my closest and dearest friend. Antony was born, the youngest of three children, in Brazil, where his father was then working. The family returned to England in 1953 and settled in Kent, where Antony led a largely comfortable and happy childhood. Although he showed early promise as a singer and musician, he always claimed not to have been particularly happy at school. His strong dislike of energetic sporting activity of any kind may well have had something to do with it. His arrival here at Trinity as a choral scholar in 1966 was a turning point. He fell in love with Cambridge, and from then on, I think he really felt it was home, though it was to be some years before he returned to settle here. Antony was not a big city man. He loved Cambridge for its buildings and its setting. Though not strongly academic himself, he loved college life. He loved the traditions and the customs, the sense of history. His years at Trinity enabled him to indulge all his developing interests in music, opera, theatre, architecture, and literature. But it was music that seemed to be dictating the direction that his career might take. In 1969, he worked as a volunteer on the Hintlesham Festival. And through a contact there, he found himself engaged as a stagehand at the Bath Festival. I, too, had been engaged in the same role at Bath, and thus began a long, happy, and close friendship. In 1970, we were both given contracts by the festival, and we set about creating Bath's first full-time administration. We shared a small office, desks facing each other, for 7 years. I could regale you for many hours with stories and anecdotes of those years, but time, I fear, will not allow. Suffice it to say that Antony's wide knowledge and deep love of music endeared him to both Michael Tippett and William Glock in their roles as successive artistic directors of the festival. Artists, performers, and audiences all loved Antony. His charm, tact, diplomacy, and humor made him a popular and much-loved linchpin of the festival for many, many years. At this time, too, his marriage to Jen brought him great happiness, as did the arrival of Sam, the first of their four children, in 1973. This young, popular, and rather trendy, if impecunious, couple brought a splash of color to Bath, which was even then only emerging from its rather staid and old-fashioned past. Antony was the proud owner of a canary yellow convertible Morris Minor. At the time, I think it was the nearest that his finances would let him get to achieving his ultimate ambition of owning a Morgan, an ambition, as we all know, he did achieve years later to his enormous delight. Frequently, Anthony would be seen, red bandana at his neck, driving fast through Bath with mountains of music stands or instruments stacked in the Little Morris, or even slightly bemused or fearful musicians as he sped them from rehearsal to concert. Joan Sutherland famously hitched a lift from him when her chauffeur failed to turn up. It was a challenge for him and for the Morris Minors suspension. In 1974, Anthony decided he needed to do two things. He wanted to spend more time with his growing family, and in those days, the expression meant exactly what it said. And he needed to improve his financial situation. He decided, for some inexplicable reason, that joining the hotel trade would suit him on both counts. He reasoned that if he and Jen worked in the same hotel, they would see more of each other. He also, I think, harbored visions of eventually buying some beautiful house which they could convert, live in, and run as a country house hotel. And in that way, he could live in surroundings that would otherwise be out of his reach, other than through a lucky break with his premium bonds. The family headed for deepest Herefordshire, where it took but a short time to discover that shift work meant that they never saw each other, and the overheads of a service industry meant the pay was worse even than the music business. They returned to Bath, much to the relief of all their friends, and Anthony joined Thea and John Dupay as they opened what was to become the legendary Priory Hotel. Anthony had still not found his niche, and in 1977, he changed course completely and joined Craig Miles, the fundraising consultants. Here, his talents were better utilized, working on appeals for Wells Cathedral and Malvern Abbey, amongst others. He was soon promoted to the company's head office at Buntingford. The arrivals of Tom, Polly, and Joe now meant that Anthony was under greater financial strain, and he decided, albeit rather late in the day, to change direction again and get a qualification that would lead to a career that might finally enable him to live slightly above the breadline. For 2 years, he studied law by correspondence course while also directing fundraising for Craig Miles. That he was also a devoted hands-on husband and father makes one wonder how on earth he found enough hours in the day to do it all. But finally, he qualified and soon joined the Cambridge firm of Palmer Wealdon. At last, Anthony was able to return to the city he loved. He also began to pick up the threads of his musical interests. It was not, however, until 1995, when he joined the Cambridge University Development Office, that he finally seemed to find a role that both engaged him and really utilized, as we've heard from the Vice Chancellor, his enormous personal qualities and experience. And it is on those qualities that I want to dwell before closing. Anthony was a most loved man. He was loved as a father and as a son, as a brother, a husband, and a friend. His cruel illness triggered a quite extraordinary outpouring of affection. Anthony and the family were literally inundated with letters, cards, flowers, and every kind of offer of help. As his condition worsened, they developed a support structure that ensured that he wanted for nothing. Meals appeared, cleaning, cooking, and gardening were done, and a night shift ensured he was never alone unless he wished to be. The love that was heaped on him as his illness took its rapid toll can now be shared between us as we battle to come to terms with the loss of such a dear friend. Anthony did not accept his situation, but he bore the burden of his illness with enormous dignity, and I do not believe he ever complained, even in the face of his rapid progression from a man in his prime and living life to the full, to the indignities, suffering, and total dependence on others to which his illness reduced him with such cruel speed. Today, difficult though it may be, we must look beyond our grief and be thankful for all the qualities that made up this beloved man. Qualities which we may all have taken for granted, but which we now realize were so precious and so exceptional. We loved him for his capacity for friendship, his love of the arts, of good food and wine. We loved him for his humor, his sense of fun, and for his total lack of side or pomposity. We loved him for his sense of style, for his tact, his diplomacy, his kindness, and his gentleness. Pushiness and stridency were strangers to him, and he was never one to hold a grudge, always preferring to forgive. I, for one, will be forever grateful for the friendship of this beloved and glorious man, who lived, laughed, sang, and walked with us for all too brief a time. A man who, through his sheer goodness and capacity for love and friendship, has left us all better and richer people. I mourn his passing, and my world feels a bleaker place without him. May the angels keep him safe, and may he rest now, forever, in peace.